Blog Talk Radio.
Hi. Can anybody hear me? Is anybody there?
Hello?
Hi, this is Tim.
Hi, Tim. Who's doing the show tonight?
Todd. He just tried to see if I was interested, so I tried to call and see if he's made his connection or not. So I guess he has. Are you there, Todd? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Can you hear me? There you go.
Yeah.
So I guess tonight the topic was going to be support. So supporting ourselves and our friends and our the rest of the people in this journey, trying to figure out what's going on here and see and recognize that. Everything we're in store for on this wonderful planet. So I was going to read something that I actually liked that Dwayne wrote. Every day is a real challenge to survive and be alive here. It is so easy to make a choice that it takes us away from what we are here to do. When people have a very limited experience and knowledge, they sometimes tend to do things they would not ordinarily do. And this is where some form of rehabilitation comes in. There are many types of rehabilitation, from simple and subtle to very extreme. Unknown to most people, we each decided to come here to become more aware and self-sufficient. The bigger picture of creation is like a huge rehabilitation to get through until a real recognition with the whole of life can be achieved. To many, this seems a bit far out and unreachable, but this can be done. And so this is what we are sharing for everyone. Learn to free yourself from all restrictions. So I thought I'd start with that since it makes a lot of sense to me. So supporting each other, everybody's on their own little journey to get through this. I guess a good term would be maze. So the amount of different people we're meeting here is a good way to show support to each other and learn from other people's examples and experience as well. So I just thought I'd throw that out and see what you thought about that, Tim.
Yes, I see things so important for those involved right now for the projects. And it's interesting when you just read that part of about why we're here and to learn our. That's the learning seems to be what's almost something that without the guidance and the education being offered, we wouldn't be able to learn on our own. So that's kind of like the supporting us through how to learn, actually what is important to learn. So as we find out things and we share what we find out, we're supporting each other too. There's so many ways to support. It seems like if we have the opportunity, if it comes along, it would seem to be the a joyous thing to be able to, whether it's physically help in projects or those that are involved in situations that materially or financially we could be able to help each other. Like, sounds like Miriam has in this material world and country she's in the situation and stuff, it seems like that it would be important to get some money to her or to help support that way. When the situation looks like it's pretty rough physically.
Yeah, I wasn't. I'm not aware of what's going on with Miriam.
Oh, I just hear a little of the hearsay stuff about her situation, and it does sound like she's pretty on her own, without much material means to take care of herself. Maybe she's doing fine. We have to go through things, it seems like, in this physical realm. But it does seem like if we have the ability or the opportunity to help, and we find out that we could help in many different ways in the support of each other.
Well, I think that goes a long way, too, for all the lessons we're here to learn or are trying to learn. We tend to get so beat up that we actually really do need the support of others and the guides to get to where we want to be.
Yeah, it's like Dwayne, you know, his situation is that he doesn't have the means, the income at the time being, it seems, to be able to present this through the modern technology and the ways he's trying to get it out to people without support from those of us involved with this new presentation. It just seems like that if we have any ability to help make it happen, we should be trying to support him and so that he can continue to do what he's doing and what he has decided about, like the projects and things. These things, in my view, in this here and now, seems like they're not being created here in the physical, like the all solar research vessel, until there's a means to start the shipbuilders and things to start putting this vessel together. It doesn't seem like it's just going to fall out of the sky all of a sudden and be there. So it's how we look at these projects and our involvement about supporting each other and what our intent is with what we have to work with.
Hi, everybody. This is Val.
Hi, Val.
And hi, Todd. Thanks for the show. It's interesting that once Dwayne does create a project or an idea, the real guides immediately, if they agree, which as far as I see, they usually agree to what he comes up with, if it makes sense. And then they work diligently on the real side, and it's According to what I heard, it could be completed in a few days, even larger projects. And this is on the real side, because there's a lot of real guides. They have access. You know, it's just different. It's a different reality. But to bring it into the physical, well, that's a different story. It needs a lot of agreement. And that's where we're at right now with the projects, is the agreement on the physical. And it's really thick here. The physical is a thick maze of agreement, and it's not agreeing to what we're doing, you know, right now. It's agreeing to its own demise, and that's where the support, that's where the reptilians and the cabal and the bankers, you know, the control factor in this world, that's where they have snuck in and created a support for themselves and their systems and agencies and what they're doing. And what they're doing is not of a benefit for people, but people don't realize that. They're not seeing it. So they're supporting the systems. And these systems are basically all the jobs, you know, because all the jobs are linked to the military-industrial complex in some way, into war, into supporting basically nonsense and distortion, supporting the financial system in some way, the government who steals the resources of other nations, goes into other nations and basically controls the people and their resources. So everybody's pretty much working for this distortion and supporting it. That it would be so easy to, if they, the public lost the support for these people and beings and supported something real. And in a way, it doesn't even have to be like the new presentation. It's just something, supports something that's real, like basic, the clean air, clean water, clean food idea. I mean, that's a start. And some people are doing that to a certain extent, but then they reach a point where if they're doing too good of a job, then the government or the controllers come in and take that over and assume the position that they are these people that are doing it, like Greenpeace or Sierra Club. I mean, at one point these were valid organizations that after a while, again, the controllers come in and they buy off the leaders or they infiltrate somehow and they're in control. So they look like the good guys, but it's really making sense of things and supporting what does make sense. And right now people are supporting what doesn't make sense, which is their own demise and their own tap lines and just nonsense, things that aren't worthy of survival. So we are here as the new presentation, and the real guides are here and the new friends, and we're all supporting what does make sense. And then in the meantime, we're supporting each other. And that makes it real, and then there comes the isness, and that's another part of this where it wouldn't exist if we didn't support it in some way and talk about it and provide knowledge and guidance and education about it and how to recognize it. For most people, it doesn't even exist. So that's again, we're here to support this reality, because it supports us. It only makes sense. So let's start.
And a lot of these so-called charities that are asking for our support have presidents and CEOs and the whole bit making millions and millions of dollars just for their own greed. And a lot of the money that think you're supporting them is just going to somebody's thick pockets. So they seem to support their own, like you say, in the cabal and religious factions, and then the government. They all seem to be in cahoots together, and then they want our support and more money. But the real support is us actually trying to see what's going on and to help fix this planet up a little bit better.
You see the demonstration of the indigenous people and how there, for instance, the Native Americans, there was no such thing as poverty. If someone needed food or shelter, it would be provided by the community, because it's just they're part of it. They take care of their own. And we're in a society where it's every man for themselves and competition and struggle, and it's just it's hectic, it's stressful. But these other communities, these indigenous people, they're a demonstration of how it could be. It doesn't have to be that way, but they're a demonstration of how it goes in along the line of supporting the environment, living alongside of it, and it will show you that it can support you. So there's no lack really in the real way of living, the living of real purpose. There's no lack. Everybody has what they need. And it could be this way here, but it's unlikely, but it could be. So we're trying to offset it best we can.
So I have a question from Karis. Actually just lives probably an hour away from me. What is the awareness like in your field? And I'm assuming she means into dealing with a lot of people who are incarcerated or in the court system. And to tell you the truth, I don't think anybody's got very much awareness other than how much time they're looking at or what's going on in the court. And again, it's one of those things that you're so involved in not seeing what's really going on. All you're worried about is the court and the lawyers and your defense and this and that. You're completely, tap-lined into not seeing what's really happening. There's a lot of help, and there's a lot of support through the correctional systems. But I don't think a lot of people use it, unfortunately. So even with me dealing with a lot of prisoners, I try to support them as much as I can. Very few want to have too much to do with me other than they can get a free sandwich or something. But just because of the way it's set up, I'm kind of in the police uniform and they're in the jail uniform, and it's kind of a little bit of a clash. But there is a lot of support through libraries and computers and education for these fellas and gals, for that matter. So I can't say there's a lot of back to the original question here. There's a lot of awareness in my line of work. I'm rambling, but I'm not saying a lot here.
Bob here too.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. I was just wondering what prison system are you dealing with?
That's in the province of Ontario, the provincial systems.
Well, you know, I have a little bit of insight into the prison systems, like in Chicago. In the city of Chicago, now, the timing of this was like in 1990. In 1990, the city of Chicago picked up 50 people a day off the streets, arrested them, that were innocent of whatever they were accused of. And they had to go through the system and hire lawyers and whatever they had to do, and they, contrary to what most people think, that we're free and we're not guilty until they prove us guilty. In the court systems, you're really guilty, and you have to prove your innocence. That's why you have to hire a lawyer to prove that you're innocent. And it's a big racket. Throughout the United States, most of the major prisons operate under the franchise system. And the more people they can get in the prisons, the more money the owners, the background owners, make. So it's really a big business. And the people that get incarcerated, I know I had some experience in Champaign County, which is central Illinois. There were so many people arrested and put in the county jail that the it's kind of like, I hate to use the term, but like the Cheyenne Social Club. You know, if somebody would get arrested for drugs and they'd go in the jail and they'd have 25 or 50 of their buddies in the county jail, and it was like a family reunion, and it was high fives and good to see you again, and how long are you in for this time, and that sort of thing. It was, you know, so it was, you know, there's nothing toward, you know, sort of training to learn morality or anything. That, I didn't see that anywhere. I know up in, I think it's North Dakota, the Native Indians up there, I haven't heard anything recently, but years ago, back in the 90s, I heard that the Indians on the reservations up there had a real hard time surviving off the land and surviving the winters. So every year, practically every Indian on the reservation would commit a crime that would put them in prison for say 6 months for the winter, spend the winter at the courtesy of the county or the state, and then come springtime when they could go fishing, they'd be let out and go again. So that's my limited experience with the prison systems.
Well, and that's 100% accurate. We get that all the time as well. November, December comes around, and, you know, it's a warm, three meals a day type place. You know, this might not be the most hospitable, but it's somewhere to get a clean clothes and three square meals a day. We had one guy was released on bail from a police, one of our detachments up here, and he was rather upset that he wasn't going to jail, so he picked up a brick and threw it through the police window when he was released, just so he would be rearrested and potentially put into the penitentiary.
Yep.
I'm sure it's the same throughout everywhere. You know, where it's cold or you need something to eat, I guess it's a good support system.
Hang on just a second. Oh, I'm sorry. I got distracted there by Sandy for a second. All right. So, when you talk about awareness and everything, as far as the inmates are concerned, my experience was that most of the prison systems have no rehab. There's no rehabilitation taking place. It's a learning center where criminals, you know, they get caught, can learn new tricks from their buddies. New ways of carjacking, new ways of breaking into banks, new ways of breaking into homes. They have people that teach them how to beat the security systems, and a lot of the prisons are just training centers to perpetrate the criminal element. So, and the better guys, the ones who are trying to be good, are probably not going to change at all, except it's just like their life has been, they're like in suspended animation for the duration of their prison sentence, and then when they're out, they take up right up where they left off before they got put in prison. So, in my personal opinion, prisons are a waste of time and effort for people. I mean, at least for the society.
I agree 100%, and they're very, very costly. I'm sure there are a lot of prisons in the States, or same in Canada, and probably everywhere for that matter. But there are resources available. And usually the only time I do see people take them is when it's court-ordered, or you have the odd person's very sincere that, no, I made a mistake, and I want to get the hell out of here as soon as possible, and I'll do what I can. And you're right. It's a lot of these guys come in there have never been in there. They learn a lot smarter to the tricks of the trades, whatever crime they were getting involved with. And then they get out, and their path is set, and they seem to follow straight down the tubes. And that's a negative portion of their support system in there. A lot of these guys just have no idea what they've gotten themselves into, and it's a sad go for a lot of this. And most of them are just kids, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids have no idea, and they're brought up that way, and they're kind of stuck there.
Well, the ones that are into stealing, they have absolutely no moral compass whatsoever. You know, I mean, you might just, well, hey, you know, it's not really nice to steal from your neighbor, you know, and they look at you cross-eyed like they don't even understand the question. They have absolutely no moral bearing whatsoever, in my experience.
Well, can't argue that at all. I actually agree with you. It's almost like it's normal. It's a normal thing for them to do, and you're the odd one for not doing it. And, you know, you'll get 15 or 20 thefts in a short amount of time, and the coppers all know who it is. That fella gets picked up, goes into jail, the thefts go down, he gets out, the thefts go right back up, and it's just a vicious cycle. And
it's kind of like the Clint Eastwood movies. You have so many cops that are corrupt that it's kind of hard to tell which side of the line you're on. You know, let me tell you a quick story. One time, and this is what started my wake up call and my awareness. I was down in Champaign, Illinois. I was living down there, and I was commuting from where I lived out to the airport where I was learning how to fly. And as I was driving out to the airport one day, there was this lady walking along the side of the road all by herself, and I decided to stop and, you know, see if she needed a lift, and she jumped right in. And I said, where can I take you? Where are you headed? And she said, I'm fleeing for my life. And I said, well, what happened? And she says, well, I was living in Chicago with my boyfriend, and I witnessed multiple murder on the streets of the city, and the people that committed the murder saw me as a witness, and they've been chasing me ever since, and I'm fleeing for my life. And so I said, well, you know, and she had no money, nothing, so I got her some food, and I put her up for a night in a motel, a cheap motel, and I signed under my name so her name wouldn't show up. And that weekend, I knew some guys that worked for the FBI in Champaign. They're part of the Champaign office of the FBI. And I went to this one guy that was a church member and part of this church that I went to services with way back then. And I said, is there anything we can do for, you know? And I said, where can she go? And this guy made a comment. He says, well, if you want to save her life, don't talk to anybody within local law enforcement. Don't talk to anybody in state enforcement. Don't talk to the FBI. And if you're lucky, if you could reach somebody in the president's cabinet, in the White House, you might get her off the hook. And I said, well, why is that? And he says, everybody, all the criminals and all the police and law enforcement, they all work together.
And, oh, yeah. It's a vicious cycle.
Well, and I thought, well, that's really kind of, you know, that's really kind of strange, you know, that you have what you know, before that time, I always thought the police were the good guys, like Roy Rogers in a white hat, you know, and you had the bad guys wearing the black hats, and everything was black and white, and if you went to the cops, everything was cushy and homey, and all the evil would be taken care of. Well, I started waking up to the fact that that really was not exactly the case. And then I got a job out west working on a sweat farm. And I worked there for about 6 months or a year. And my boss he built a bunch of cabins on this ranch. It was about a 7,000 acre ranch. And he builds these cabins and invites different people to move onto the operation. And one of the gentlemen, was not a hired hand. He was a retired gentleman, and he was one of the nicest guys I ever met. And he would invite me over to his house for dinner, and we'd have fireside chats in his log cabin. And eventually, as we talked, I began to realize that he was part of the mafia. And being a young 22-year-old kid, you know, I had no idea of all this stuff, you know. So, I mean, I watched all those gangster movies with Humphrey Bogart growing up as a kid and stuff, but I didn't know really much about the mafia. And it turns out he was a financial advisor for the mafia west of the Mississippi River. And he said the mafia in the United States is divided up into two different clans, east of the Mississippi and west of the Mississippi. And he told me the headquarters for east of the Mississippi is in Atlanta, Georgia. And his daughter was a big wheel in that. And west of the Mississippi was Jackson Hole, Wyoming, was the headquarters. And he went on to tell me how he got, he was a prodigy for Gene Autry and got him involved in the sports, because sports is a big part of the mafia operations. And I was so naive and so new to this. One day I asked him, I said, well, what do you know, you're such a nice guy and everything. What do you do? You know, I know you guys must have something to do with drugs and drug operations, because I hear that, you know, in the movies and everything else. And I said, what do you do when the president hires somebody to be a drug lord and go after all the drug runners in the country? And he says to me, Bobby, he says, you don't understand. And I said, well, what do you mean I don't understand? He says, you don't understand how it works. He says, you know, for one, you don't understand that the president works for us. The president of the United States works for us. And I said, well, what do you mean the president of the United States works for you? And he says, it's like this. He says, you know, we've been running drugs for years and years and years in and out of the United States, and we bring all this stuff in, and we have our own distributors and our own system of handling the drugs all the way down to the street level, you know, from the time we import it from foreign countries all the way down to the street level. But he says, once in a while, he says, some guy will come along that they don't know that tries to take over different lines of the drug running. And they come in and they murder their guys, and they take over the drug running, and they have their own source, and they start distributing drugs in their areas, like maybe Miami or some city like Kansas City or something like that. And he said that they would keep an eye on them, and they track them and watch them. And he says that after a period of time, if these guys started building, you know, they'd go talk to them, and they'd say, you know, you guys are interfering with our lines. You know, we like you, and you can become part of our operation. You know, for a small fee, we'll charge you interest, and you can keep operating. We'll leave you alone, or you know, if you won't deal with us, you know, we have a problem. And so what he told me was when enough cities and the different lines were interrupted and the people wouldn't tow the party line for the mafia, that's when they would call on the president, and the president would use taxpayer dollars and bring in all their DA people, and they would go out and they would, their total focus was not at the mafia, but it was at the competition for the mafia. They were out there and they would clean up all the competition for the mafia, and they might spend a year or two and they'd clean up everybody. They'd put them all in jail or do whatever they do. And then when life went back to normal, the drug lord that the president hired would retire, and they'd give him medals for doing such a wonderful job, and the mafia drug running would go back to its normal status. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Well, so, and then you got to wonder, why are drugs illegal at the street level? Well, the only reason why drugs are illegal at the street level and why the price of possession is so high is to keep the value of drugs up. That's the only purpose, is to keep the value up. And, now, as you know, one of the main reasons we fought the war in Vietnam, that there were two reasons we fought the war in Vietnam. One was to open up the oil lines, and I can tell you a lot about that. They opened up the oil industry for Standard Oil Corporation, and the second thing is they expanded their drug operations into Asia. And there's a bunch of reports where the generals in Asia, from China and those small countries like Vietnam and those areas, they spilled the beans on the U.S. government because the CIA went in there and they opened up the drug trade and used military aircraft to fly the drugs back to the United States. And I assume you're familiar with that, all the drug running. When Bill Clinton was president, they were running the drugs in military aircraft, and they were flying the aircraft right into Mena, Arkansas, right under Clinton's nose. And you heard the story about the kids that were walking along the railroad tracks that spotted the operation, so they went out and killed these kids, and that was a big scandal, where they murdered the kids just for watching the airplanes land. And you know the story about David Koresh being murdered in Waco, Texas, right?
Yep. That was back in 1985? Ish.
Well, it was...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, anyway, his group was murdered because they were tracking... He had a whole bunch of friends in his church all throughout the United States and in the military overseas, and they were actually tracking the flights. Whenever a C-130 or C-5 or whatever took off from Vietnam or Afghanistan or wherever it was with a plane load of drugs flying back to the United States, they would actually track it. And when it landed in the United States and they used the military aircraft to transfer the money into C-130s and smaller aircraft as it got distributed throughout the United States, these guys were tracking it. And that's the reason why that Janet Reno and her group brought in the military to do in David Koresh. It had nothing to do about a sawed-off shotgun or any of that or any of the other things he did. The people that knew David Koresh was really a wonderful guy, a real patriot, and they just... Everything they said about him was probably a lie. He was really a good guy. They were just tracking the drugs, and they were getting ready to go public with a public report. And just before they were able to put that report out is when their compound got attacked and they all got murdered by the U.S. government. So, I mean, that's, you know, you know, what you have to ask yourself, you know, like Dwayne always says, he says, what makes sense? Does it make sense that the government is passing laws against drugs, yet they're the biggest importer of drugs in the United States? I mean, what's wrong with that picture? You know, What's wrong with that, you know?
Well, that and they approve all these drugs that the pharmaceutical companies make are absolute poison.
Well, yeah, that's true, too.
So it's just all about them, you know, more money and power to me. It's certainly
so
not
you're
about
talking about the prison system. Look how many people are in prison but just because of drug possession or distribution.
Oh.
And they're
and
they might have a pound of cocaine. Well, compare that with 500,000 pounds of cocaine on a military aircraft, you know. So what's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, exactly. What the government says is okay is okay. So, Val, you still there?
Yes, sir.
just making sure we haven't put you to sleep.
No, it's very interesting, actually. Bob's got a lot of good stories.
There's another book that Dwayne put out, his latest.
You know, one thing that is a little bit off the subject, but still in line what we're talking about, that those that are of a menace to the community, for example, in the indigenous Native American peoples, they would just ignore them. It wasn't anything like prisons. They were just like, you know, basically you're no longer part of the community and goodbye. So that's the way they would deal with them. It wasn't any kind of punishment. Sometimes it would be, but these people were able to maintain a community and, you know, keep everybody in line just by... Excuse me, I'm driving. So, yeah, we're just, they just kept everybody in line by, again, just making sense of things and, like, you know, helping each other. And if you're not helping somebody by, you know, stealing or killing somebody, you know, it's not part of survival. But their system is based on being with the natural environment and helping each other to survive. So, anybody who didn't do that, well, they would just basically, they would be, you know, just they could go do their own thing somewhere. But when that happens, you know, it's a little bit harder to be an individual out in the wilderness than having the support of your community, where people have different skills and can do different things. And that's just basically the way we notice the way Dwayne and the real guides work, too, is that they, you know, if you're not, I mean, this is a little bit harsh, but if you're not with us, you're against us. I mean, that's kind of like what Paul Twitchell had that kind of saying. I mean, it's not exactly like that, but it's not as harsh, but, you know, you're either with making sense of things or not. It's just very clear cut. And what we're doing makes a lot of sense, and to contribute to that idea and with a real purpose, doing something to help everybody and help life and help yourself in the meanwhile, it just makes sense.
Well, we've been so sensitized to what doesn't make sense, it's just that much harder to look at things and try to make sense of them. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course. It's just we've been, that's another reason we're here to help people, re-educate people and guide them to being able to live together like we did in kindergarten. Didn't we learn that in kindergarten, how to play nice with each other? I mean, this is just basic social consideration for each other. I mean, we have the resources, we have the technology, we don't have to fight over them like the controllers have us do. You know, we don't have to fight over oil or water or a piece of land. It just doesn't register, really. So we have to kind of retrain or help people to see how to get along with each other again, because they've been so conditioned with a struggle idea and to compete for something that is available to everybody. That's a huge undertaking, because people it's so they're so tap lined that they don't see it. But that's what the real guides do. They help remove these tap lines slowly, in a way that you can handle it, and then you'll be able to see more and have the greater awareness.
Well, and you gotta think too, some of those tap lines have been in you since you were born. You know, your parents started with something and it's just continued on and on and on. So that's one hell of a tap line to try to pull out at once. It's going to take some work.
Maybe this would be a good time to share with people how you get rid of the tap lines and how you work with the real guides. And that's by singing New You, You. Like New You, 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 You. And you do that for 15 to 20 minutes in the morning, 15 to 20 minutes at night. And that shows the real guides that you're sincere about finding out what the truth is, you know, some of the things we're talking about. And they can see for themselves, you know, if they will show the real guides that they're sincere and working with them and finding out what the truth is, then by doing the New You song, then the real guides will work with them and show them what's real, and they can start on the journey of having a real life rather than some brainwashed, dogmented system that they're presently in.
It's so that people actually do have to figure it out for themselves, and that's where it gets tricky for people, and they avoid that confrontation with themselves and with what really has to be done, because they have to face themselves. They have to figure out how to become more aware. I mean, tap lines remove, just you're going to see more. More, but it's still a matter of doing something. It's a doing position. So you're going to be okay, clear of these things, these influences, these attachments. But then life says, okay, now what? What are you going to do about it? So, you know, something is, got to get up and do something to contribute. And that's the way then it really becomes fun. Then the adventure really starts. I've had tap lines removed that I just one time I woke up in the morning and it's just like, oh, you know, you just feel it's, and it's obvious. It was so obvious. It's just gone. You know, it was an attachment to a relationship and it was gone. I knew intuitively that the real guides had removed it. But then, okay, so now you have more choices and you have more freedom and opportunities to do something, and it is really about doing something to contribute. And that's, again, where we lose a lot of people, because they can't seem to figure it out. You know, they get into another tap line. You know, we have more than one tap line usually. So, or most people do. So there's a lot of, and there's potentially other tap lines we can create, because we are the creators. We have choice, free will. So we can go back and do it again if we want to. But for survival, it's just better for us to to go on with his venture and to see more, because coming back here, it's not going to be good. You keep reincarnating again with these attachments and tap lines that you create for yourself through your agreements, mostly unconscious. It's better off. You're better off if you just keep going with it, with the idea of becoming more aware.
Nice you said, Tim. Or Val. What time is it? It's pretty close to an hour. I guess we should maybe wrap it up for the night. I can start the new you. New you, you, you. Val?
New you.
Bob?
New you, 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 you.
And Tim, if you're still around?
New you, you, you. I'll see everybody.
Thanks,
hey,
Todd.
Thanks very much, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.